The song Play Dead means a lot to me. Maybe when you can find some time, it is highly interesting to listen to the whole song. Some of the words of the song seem to tell what I couldn't say for a long time. Hello, thank you for listening. My name is Esther, I am 54 years old. This podcast is about how I survived a dissociative identity disorder, DID, and found a meaning for life. I play dead and the hurt stops. I play dead. It is sometimes just like sleeping. Words of the song of Björk. Words that reflect the often confusing and opposing feelings that someone suffering from DID may experience. I am an artist and have always painted about my life story of sexual abuse in order to survive. One of my paintings is about feelings Björk sings about. The painting is called Despair and is about someone sitting on the floor in the shower and can no longer move. At the age of 26, I am immediately recognized myself in Björk's song, like it was about me. I was the one who played dead. However, it was a reminder of a traumatic experience from the past that made my body do this. As a young woman of 26 years, I had no control over it at all. It just happened to me. The confrontation with my body became too much for me. However, this and other symptoms was not understood by the team of psychologists, therapists and psychiatrists around me. No matter how benevolent they were, they did not give me the confidence that what I asked for could be honored. My question was, help me through my re-experiences. They thought that would be too hard for me. I only got therapy in the here and now and a lot of pills. That didn't help at all. All I noticed was how many voices were stirring in my head and how many strange symptoms were forcing themselves on me. I didn't understand any of it and thought I was crazy, totally crazy. But on the other hand, I wanted so badly being the mother of a small child, and I made a rigorous decision. I left psychiatry for a while and became a pastor, a dream I wanted to make come true. This worked for a period of 5 years, but my old brain couldn't be fooled anymore. I could still say no so hard to the memories of my childhood. The memories of my childhood continued to force themselves on me more and more often in dreams, nightmares and flashbacks. And I discovered that the body also had its own memory of trauma. I was getting sicker and sicker. I got one pneumonia after another and became visually impaired within 3 years. As a result, I was forced to incapacitate. I was very sad but could no longer participate in the labor market. And from one day to the next, I found myself in the madness of psychiatry again. The psychiatrist was genuinely a fine doctor, and he tried pills that best suited me and reduced my re-experiences. But other than that, it didn't come to an adequate treatment. The only thing he could offer me were crisis admissions to psychiatry. What's so sad about that is that the best years of our lives as a family have been wasted on it. But both my partner and our son were secondarily traumatized by the long years that my search for help lasted. My inner world, meanwhile, felt like a puzzle that I could not solve and that consisted of too many pieces for me. The confusing thing was that each piece seemed to have a voice with its own will and feelings, and each of those voices seemed to have a piece of the traumatic history. But somehow I couldn't reach that at all. The main characteristic of trauma is avoidance. And on the front end, I wanted to be normal. I especially didn't want anyone to notice that I was a traumatized woman. But that puzzle meant that in the first years in psychiatry, I often encountered misdiagnoses and misunderstandings from nurses and psychiatrists. Also, my life story was underestimated. They thought it wasn't too bad, and when, after years of wandering in psychiatry, it became increasingly clear how serious the situation was with me, my childhood and all the symptoms, it became increasingly difficult to come to a cure or recovery. I don't know if it's the same in other countries, but in the Netherlands, there is a tacit view that when you are severely traumatized, recovery is hardly possible. The other persistent view is that when someone has an attachment disorder, that attachment disorder is there forever. I will not deny that I am a human being with large scars, but I talk to you and am a living proof that recovery is possible. That exciting question is, how was that possible? There have been years of completely darkness and despair. I count all the years in psychiatry among them. I certainly believe the psychiatrists and his team did their best, but because the diagnosis left much to be desired and they mainly sought treatment in medication, I was unable to get out of that despair and suicidality. There are few things that made me survive this predicament. In the first podcast, I mentioned that I requested a second opinion when I got completely stuck in psychiatry. That had one main reason, and that was my son. I was, I thought, first and foremost a mother. No matter how suicidal I was, I could not and should not abandon my child. The love for my child has always been my drive to keep going. The second is that I have been experiencing several times in the darkest moments that I was taken care of by the power of angels. It might be weird to tell you that here, but it's that I've experienced and what has kept me alive. The third is my partner's love. For 30 years he has loved me with unwavering devotion. Last year he became life-threateningly ill and I almost lost him, but we are still together and his love means everything to me. And there have always been a few dear friends, people who have made a difference, people who would listen and who didn't judge, even though I could mean or afford so little myself and I needed to tell again and again. At some point I was hospitalized again, yet another crisis admission. Actually, that didn't work. Time and again, I was admitted to psychiatry with a crisis. At one point, I thought, I just belong to the furniture and I'm not human anymore. There wasn't even an intake done with when I came. I was there again, period. In fact, I got so bad that I wasn't being watched over anymore, no matter how suicidal I was. I managed to escape from the closed ward and wandered for hours along the tracks of the train that can ride past the grounds of the psychiatric ward. To make a long story short, my husband took me home and I was never admitted again. Still, what was to be done? Things were said to me as you are so too severely traumatized to get good help and you will never get any better than this. But I thought, I am a mother. This cannot be it. That's why I searched the internet for a trauma therapist and found someone and emailed if I could ask for a second opinion. And I was allowed to come. And after research, this therapist and researcher told me that I had DID, a dissociative identity disorder. The only thing I experienced during that appointment was that the room turned into a basement and everything started running. It was extremely creepy. The therapist told me that in front of his eyes I turned into a little girl and also answered his questions in a different voice. I didn't remember that at all. What the therapist found was that I had lost all faith in people. I was also very afraid of the therapist and confused him with my father. I will never forget a question he asked me. Do you want to change? Yes, of course, I said. It was with that question that my process of becoming whole again began for me. But oh, what a difficult process that was. What I really liked was how seriously my therapist took me. He gave me literature to read, and for the first time I read books about my diagnosis. The therapy I followed was face-oriented trauma treatment or an active trauma treatment. The first stage was that of stabilization. I was shocked. Don't stabilize me again. I had been doing that for 12 years. I didn't see the point of that at all. However, the therapist was able to explain to me that it might turn out differently this time. He promised that we would definitely deal with my childhood traumas, provided that I could go through the work of the first phase properly, because I could see very few things at that time and was deep in the pit. I found it very difficult to understand, but I tried. Most importantly, I think this therapist allowed me to develop a relationship of trust between him and me with healthy boundaries. I cannot stress the latter enough. Almost immediately, he taught me that he was available during office hours, but not outside of it. Then I had to make do with psychiatric crisis services and trying to build a small, reliable group of friends. I put everything he taught me into practice. I always had one or two dear friends beside my wonderful partner. After the first phase, in which the trust had grown sufficiently, I was allowed to tell about things from my past little by little. As if that worked, of course not. Every therapy hour I sat in a corner or under the table, or I couldn't say a word. All expressions of small parts in me, in my brain, I had no control over it once therapy started. What worked for me was when the therapist put down a paper and pencil and invited me to maybe draw something of what was going on inside. Once again, it helped me to tell my life story through art. At home, too, I started painting and drawing images of what was going on in my head, in my dreams, and in my subconscious. Little by little, I managed to retrieve the frozen memories that has always been imposed as reliefs and flashbacks from that frozen state. I did that by drawing over those images, giving them words bit by bit, and practicing with secure attachment every day. The latter, that practice with secure attachment, was a dire necessity. If I hadn't practiced that, it wouldn't be able to do it right now. But by very consciously saying to myself, I can learn this again, and I am now very consciously going to face that trust again with these few safe people. That's how I really learned it again. And I have to tell you, I can do that. I can trust some safe people again. I also honestly admit that it remains a vulnerable place in myself, that I'm also easily anxious when it comes to trust. That always remains vulnerable. But I also always have good and joyful experiences as well. In 2011, I participated in an exhibition in New York of survivors of all kinds of domestic violence. After that exhibition, I wanted to organize something similar in the Netherlands. Together with fellow sufferers, I was in Apeldoorn to organize an exhibition of art about domestic violence and sexual abuse. And afterwards, I founded the Art from Violence Foundation, Kunst uit Geweld. In all the years that followed, I spoke to hundreds of fellow sufferers, and we all shared stories. And with the foundation, we have held more than 30 exhibitions throughout the country. Sometimes I was so physically ill myself that it was difficult to get everything done. But even so, working with the foundation gave me strength again and again, power to keep going, strength and meaning for life. And the contact with fellow sufferers is really invaluable. I also talk to many fellow sufferers about life after trauma. How do you live your life now? How do you learn to trust people again? Or what's just nice to do in everyday life? And many fellow sufferers also really want to have a meaningful life. So much has been taken away from us, our integrity, our whole being, our identity. Everything has been taken away from us. And then the real question is, what's left for me now? Who am I? And I have a voice, and I want to be heard. Foundation Art from Violence therefore helps fellow sufferers to tell stories through art. Last year, 15 fellow sufferers and I wrote a book together about the consequences of violence and meaning of life. The book is called Kracht uit Geweld, Strength from Violence. A few years ago, I was able to successfully complete trauma therapy. I had crossed the finish line. I thought, now I am here, in the sense that I had learned to deal with the scars that the traumas had left in my life. However, what I found out in a nasty way is that my body was also broken. I was already sick, but my illnesses were also getting more serious. That was a big setback. And last year my husband also became seriously ill. As I mentioned before, he almost died, but we are still together, and that is a real gift we treasure every day with our son and his girlfriend. And I hope, but by talking about all of this, people discover that by supporting each other, there is still so much possible. Recovery that goes beyond physical and mental illness, more than you can see. Thank you for listening. Take care. Esther.